We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. It is officially game week. Tar Heels, Virginia Tech, Friday, 6 o'clock, Blacksburg. Division game, Inner Sandman. Prime time. Hog mollies. Adam, what's up?
I couldn't hear any of that because I'm wearing my headphones over my hard hat that signifies that it is game week.
Yeah, it's time to go to work.
Yeah, it's my game day hard hat, and I'm ready for game week because we've been talking about it for a long time. And one thing to add to your list that ended with hog mollies,
yeah.
Top 10 Tar Heels.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, okay, look, we've had this debate before, but I want to put it to rest right now, Adam. Should we have a Tuesday song for Tuesday shows? Look, let's just air it out right now.
We could do
a poll.
Maybe we should do a poll. We definitely got some submissions after we talked about it. Some ideas.
Yeah, and we've gotten ideas before. I mean, we have received suggestions before. I gotta say, it's gonna be hard though to match Friday.
That's the problem. It's not just a day of the week. Is the Friday song.
Yeah, that's right. It's a mindset.
It's a whole way of life. And I just don't believe a similar Tuesday song has been crafted. Look, I understand there are other songs with days of the week in the title, but do they encompass the all-out joy that is an artistry, really, that is Rebecca Black? I'm not sure they do, but I would certainly defer to the greater wisdom of the listening public.
Well, Miles, put out a poll.
Miles, come in here. Shut up. Miles, we've talked about that.
we'll put out a poll.
I don't have to do what you say.
It's Miles like a character in Monsters, Inc.? Why does he talk like that?
He's down in the Miles cave. So his voice.
What was that? What?
I'm tired of doing graphics.
It's like Miles has been in some dark room smoking cigarettes for three straight weeks. You okay, Miles?
It's been the off season.
You okay, buddy?
You don't know what Miles has been doing. We don't ask. As long as the tweets are fire, he does what he wants in the summertime.
So
stop bothering me.
Please do two things. Vote in the poll about whether or not you think we should have a Tuesday song. And two, forget you ever heard that horrific sound that Adam just slam dunked into your ears. Whoa, well, if you're still listening, we got a good show coming up. So, we'll talk a little Tar Heels. Mac Brown met with the media on Monday. We're going to put in a little bit of press conference audio just so you can hear from the head coach of the Tar Heels and his thoughts leading in to Friday's matchup. Great guest. Big time college football expert, Adam. I mean, it's Mr. College Football, for goodness sakes.
One of the biggest.
No, yeah, one of the best. Tony Barnhart is going to join us, and we're going to discuss the landscape of college football with name, image, and likeness, and, of course, the conference shenanigans going on. And I will say, Adam, I mean, Tony Barnhart's super well-respected, but also he covers the SEC very closely, and he provides a different perspective on some things than you and I have. So, look, we're just doing our due diligence and making sure that everyone is informed on all the possibilities.
It's part of what makes this great nation so wonderful, bringing in the opposing viewpoints, having a respectful discussion, yeah. Just what happens in America every single day.
Yeah, it's what happens on Twitter every second of the day.
Right.
So you're going to hear our conversation with Tony Barnhart and get you ready for the season. We have Adam's list. We'll review Tar Heel action from this past weekend from some Olympic sports and who knows what else. And Adam, an all-time potty submission from our third host on the show, Aaron Mattson.
A great by one of the greats.
So we'll talk about that too. And how are we able to do this, you ask? How are we able to keep churning out this high-level entertainment and content like Adam's Miles impression? How? Due to our sponsorship from our fine folks like LS Tractor. They know it's getting towards weed and feed time, getting towards that fall reseeding time. Not quite there yet, but it's going to happen. Your partner is going to be like, honey, could you go reseed the yard? And you're going to say, but honey, the Tar Heel game is on. Well, guess what? LS Tractor can help make short work of that and many other yard projects. Normal yard maintenance, like weeding and feeding, or larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. LSTractorUSA.com. That's the website. LS Tractor. What's it about for you? Game week. Heels, Virginia Tech, 6 o'clock Friday. Adam, this is a really big game. I mean, it is a very aggressive way to start this season because you are not easing into anything. And I think both teams have a lot on the line for different reasons. Carolina is trying to say and prove that it is ready for this extra spotlight that it is receiving. And what better way to do that than on the road against a division team? That's a tough place to play, a good opponent. Virginia Tech is not in as stable a place as the Tar Heels are at this moment. And so they're looking for a big win to kind of jumpstart a season and feel good and try to get things back on track after missing a bowl game last year and some questions about Justin Fuente and all those things. So this is an important game for both teams. We'll do full breakdown of the matchup coming up on Friday, but both teams with a fair amount on the line. And I do think one thing, like right now, like today, that is important for both coaching staffs is you're so close. Don't try to win the game on Monday or Tuesday. And I do think that can happen, especially when you start the way that both these teams are starting an important game early in the year. Make sure that you're freshest and most ready on Friday, in this case, compared to today.
And it feels like the Tar Heels have done that. And we've talked about having this type of opener as opposed to a maybe more typical type of opener. The gamesmanship has already started. Justin Fuente, in his press conference yesterday, look, he was just throwing it out there, Jens. Carolina's secondary is going to grab you at the line. They had one of our guys in a headlock last year. What he is trying to say is, I would appreciate some pass interference, penalty flags, ACC officials, please take note by this comment, I have made you aware. So just keep an eye on that.
Can I just say, I think that's a bad move. Like, why would you say that now? I mean, I know the answer is just what you just said, but I don't think you're winning any favors by saying that.
Well, all you've done is put a little extra fuel in Tony Grimes's fire, in Dre Bly's fire. I mean, you think Dre Bly's not going to have that quote blown up in the meeting room and saying, this guy thinks you can't cover without committing penalties. Can you guys cover or not? I thought you were rude boys. I thought we were the rude boys together, like Jones and Adam on the video pod. So can you go out there and cover without getting penalties? Let's find out on Friday. And I bet that will be discussed. But coaches do this from time to time, and sometimes it works and sometimes it backfires horribly.
Again, we'll go through a full breakdown of the matchup on Friday.
Well, here's one other thing. If you're extremely confident in your quarterback and receivers, you don't have to say that because you feel like they're going to complete passes no matter who's defending them. So I think that tells you a little bit about some areas of concern also.
This is going to be a very basic statement, but what a luxury it is to go into this game with a quarterback who you trust. I think this, and I'm not saying, you know, this is a slam dunk Tar Heel victory because it absolutely is not. But I think you feel a lot less confident if you don't know who that you got Sam Howell behind center. And again, I know that's a very basic statement, but I think a lot of times in a preseason, you start talking about the new guys and who's going to fill this role. And, you know, this guy's a freshman who might play. And we've mentioned this about on the defensive side and talking about Jeremiah. I think you forget sometimes to think about and appreciate the more veteran presence that you do have because they aren't as exciting to talk about because for the most part, you know what you're going to get with Sam Howell. But what an incredible luxury that is to have.
It just gives you that little feeling of peace. You know there's going to be that point in the football game at some point where you've turned it over and then the other team hits a big play, but you're going to be able to give the ball back to the offense and the ball will be in Sam Howell's hands. It's not like it's a wide receiver who you have to get the ball to him. The ball is going to be in the hands of your very best player as soon as you get the ball back on offense. And more often than not, he makes the right thing happen. And that's a luxury that you begin to take for granted as he goes into his third season. But once he's gone, you'll remember just how nice that was.
Well, that's right. I mean, next year at this time, I think it's fair to assume that Sam Howell isn't going to be here anymore. And so Carolina is going to be going into a season opener, which we now have learned is against Florida A&M. That was announced this past week. Because if I'm not mistaken, Adam, it was going to be Appalachian State on the road. That would have been a difficult assignment for a first-time quarterback because again, we're making some long-term assumptions here that have nothing to do with this upcoming game, but that either Jacoby Criswell or Drake May is going to be the starter next year for Carolina. And so the Florida A&M move makes sense is my point there. But you're just going to have a different feeling going into next year. You would assume hopefully those guys get some reps this year in some games where Carolina has a big lead and you get to see and learn a little bit more about them, but you're not going to know what you know about Sam Howell.
Even freshman year, Sam Howell had some hiccups.
Right, of course.
So first year starter, not Sam Howell, is going to have significantly more hiccups.
That's a future Tar Heel problem.
Yeah, that's for week zero in 2022.
Yeah, that's right. Not worried about that. Okay, so let's do this. Let's let you listen. Mack Brown met with the media on Monday, got into his traditional game week rotation where he will have a press conference every Monday. Want to let you hear some of that, just his opening comment or two, so you can get a feel for what Coach Brown is talking about leading into this game. We'll also mention Tar Heels traveling, of course, for this game. They'll be leaving on Thursday of this week. This is one of the few games out of the state of North Carolina that the Tar Heels will bus to. For the most part, when Carolina is playing out of the state, it will fly. But with this game, if you're taking a car, it's about 3 hours to get from Chapel Hill to Blacksburg. On a bus, it's going to be a little bit longer. So, you know, 3:15, 3:30 at the most. So they are going to bus up there. There will be, according to Coach Brown, you know, the COVID protocols in place and masks and things like that. So Tar Heels will be going through that coming up later this week to get up there. And they can't stay in Blacksburg because there isn't a hotel large enough. So they end up staying about 45 to 60 minutes outside of Blacksburg. So there are just a little bit of extra travel challenges with this one where you do, even on game day, you have to leave a little bit earlier than you normally would because you do have a bit of a drive to get there.
6 p.m. game time, I support that. That gives you a night game, but it's not super late, and it doesn't end super late, but you can still look forward to it all day. I like 6 o'clock game time.
Okay, let's get to comments from Mack Brown. This is from his meeting with the media on Monday as he gets ready. He and his team get ready for Carolina and Virginia Tech.
The opening games are really, really tricky. This is my 33rd one. And you, as a head coach, have to make a lot of decisions. How much do you run? How much do you hit? How much do you stay out in the sun? You've got a night ball game. It'll be half light and half dark with 6 o'clock starting time. But you don't want to be too tired and dead-legged, but you got to get your work done. Now we're in a different place than we were 2 years ago and even last year some, where we've got to decide who plays and how many plays do they play. You have to earn the right to play. And the players do that. The coaches really don't decide that. The players do. But now, even on a Monday for a Friday night game, you've got to decide when do you take a certain defensive lineman out, put another guy in for 4 plays or 6 plays or 10 plays. So when is the backup guy as good as the starter when the starter's tired? Because we played some guys 90-something plays at Virginia Tech a couple of years ago on defense and the defensive line, and that's just ridiculous. That's too much. And then you wonder why you lose late in the ball game. So we're still working on all of those things as we start working toward the game on Friday night. We wanted to create depth as a team, and we feel like we did that. We're a lot deeper with this team than we've been with any of the other teams that we have had. We wanted to establish ourselves at running back and wide receiver. I don't think we can answer those questions till after the game, because you can't figure out in practice who's going to do well and who's not. And that's the biggest question mark about this team that will be answered Friday night is, can we replace the 4,000 yards of offense that we lost, and who will be doing it? And you've got Ty Chandler, who will be out there early. You've got Caleb Hood, who we feel like will play. And DJ Jones that will play at running back, but how much will they play and how productive will they be, because none of them are experienced in this offense. And then the same at wide receiver. We've got a lot of guys, and Jeremy told you this morning, Bo will not play. We've got a lot of guys that have played some, but we haven't got guys with near the experience of Daz or Diami in the game on Friday night, and Virginia Tech's got a very experienced and good secondary. So those questions didn't get answered, and I was watching both backup quarterbacks this morning in practice, and really felt like everybody wants a definitive, this one's better than this one would go in. The truth is both of them are really good, and they're going to be good players moving forward, and they both had tremendous camps. So I do feel really, really good about our quarterback room moving forward. But most first games are lost more than one. You watch those games Saturday, and there's so many mistakes. And you just hope as a coaching staff that you've helped your team prepare to a point they'll have fewer mistakes. You go back and look at even on the road night games early. We lose to Florida State, and we have two block punts in the game. We have an interception for a touchdown in the game. Have a situation where they drive the length of the field or 75 yards in a minute, 26 seconds and score right before the half. And then we dropped a punt at the 30. So that's 20 something points that you give up on the road that you just can't do it. And then the same at Virginia. There's a 75 yard flare for a touchdown. There's an interception at their 30. There's a drop punt at their 30. We botched a touchdown right before the half, and then didn't stop a fake punt at the end. So those are things that you can't do and win ball games, and we need to improve in those areas on Friday night. Do you want to open up with a regional rival on the road, a huge conference game? Probably not, but that's done by TV. We don't get asked. Does it excite your players and your fans in the summer? Yes. So you probably work harder than if you were opening up with a lesser opponent. Unlike some people, I love going to stadiums that are full and have passionate fans like Virginia Tech. And especially after last year, our young people didn't get to experience full stadiums. And that's just not the way college football is. You miss the pageantry and the fun. And Virginia Tech's got the great opening. They've got the tremendous fans, and it's a fun place to play, a challenging place to play, but it's a fun challenge. So I know our guys really, really look forward to going up there and love that atmosphere 2 years ago. And you've got to really compliment the Virginia Tech fans, because they're as good as any fans in the country. They're going to come, they're going to be loud, and they're going to support their team. And they'll continue to do that. So in this game, you, like all others, you got to win the rushing battle, and that's hard for us because they've rushed for over 250 yards against us the last 2 years. And three of the five starting linemen are, offensive linemen are back. That center, left guard, and left tackle are as good as anybody in college football. And as I look, three or four of these guys are from North Carolina, so we can't let really good players like this get out of state. Then you got to win the turnover battle, and who knows? When you're working with new receivers and new running backs, it's always a concern with ball security. And we've got to force more turnovers. That's something we haven't done the last 2 years that we need to do. But stopping the run against Virginia Tech will be the toughest thing, because they have been tougher than we are and more physical than we've been for the last 2 years. So that's something that has to get better on Friday night. We've got to handle the atmosphere, but I think, again, that's fun. That's something that you enjoy doing. And then you got to play hard. One thing I'll give Virginia Tech credit for, both years we've played them, they haven't given up. They were behind at Virginia Tech 2 years ago and came back and fought. Last year they're behind, they score, the onside kick, they score again, and they kept a game close that we were moving the ball really, really well in. How important is this game in recruiting? I don't think it matters. Recruits pretty much make their decisions. I think they're a year or two out now. So I do not feel like a single game makes a decision for a young person. And they see their future way out past this one game. So I don't see it being that much difference in from that standpoint. As far as COVID's concerned, I saw Bruce Arians say the other night, they're going back to last year's protocols, and they're just going to act like it's there, it's real. So whether you're vaccinated or not, we're going to wear a mask and try to social distance and make sure that we're as safe as we possibly can be as a team. We are above the 85%, so we can meet as a team, and that's been so much better that you can meet in our staff or in our team room instead of meeting in the blue zone where they're scattered out all over the place. There's just not as much emotion at that time. We can eat together. We can meet in our meeting rooms together. We do wear masks when we're inside. You can take it off to eat. We will wear masks on the buses going up to and coming back from Virginia Tech, but we will be able to eat on the bus coming back. We will not have to eat in the stadium. Our guys are getting tested twice a week. That's a university guideline or protocol for COVID. The ACC said that players had to be tested once a week. Ours will be tested twice. But we're doing what Bruce said. We're pretty much going back to what we did last year, and our guys handled it really, really well last year, and we've got to hope that they do the same this year. They're going to have to live in their bubble, and they're going to have to go to class, but they're going to have to take care of themselves for their safety and the safety of others, but also to have a chance to play. As far as Virginia Tech's concerned, and I'll mention a few highlights on both sides. John Tenuta has been a friend of mine forever. It's fun to watch his son play left tackle, Luke, and he's really, really good. He's 6'9 and 322. And that left side, Smith and Hoffman, they blocked us all over the place last year. Just ran up and down the field, and again, they're really, really good. Hoffman's from Statesville, and he's a tremendous center. Then you've got James Mitchell, the tight end's an NFL guy. I thought he was one of the best-looking tight ends 2 years ago and last year I've ever seen. So he'll definitely be an NFL guy. Braxton Burmaster will start at quarterback. He's 3-1. He played against us last year, but he can run. So he's a dual-threat guy, and we have not handled running quarterbacks well. Even in the Florida State and the Virginia game, we were hurt by quarterback runs in both of those games. Then they've got the two good backs with Holston and Blackshear, and Turner and Robinson are really good. Again, Trey Turner's a young man from Greensboro, and he's big and he's tall and he can really run. And Robinson's a whole lot like Daz Newsome. He can do a lot of different things with the ball. Defensively, one of the best defensive ends we played last year was Amari Barno. This guy's 6'6". 245 and can run. He's a great pass rusher. Jordan Williams was a young man we looked at. He was a defensive tackle that transferred in from Clemson, and he's starting at defensive tackle. Dax Holyfield was very, very highly recruited by us, and he'll start at linebacker. And Alan Tisdale's another linebacker that started, and he's from Greensboro. And he's a big, tall guy that can run. Devin Hunter's he and Connor and Strong are all really, really good defensive backs, and they'll be experienced in the secondary, and that's a concern against our guys that more inexperienced in the receiver corps.
So 6 o'clock on Friday, Carolina, Virginia Tech. We'll talk more about the specific matchup later in the week. Adam, anything else on your mind game week football-wise before we get to Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football? Preview a little college football action.
No, ready for it. Excited. We've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Did you watch any football this past weekend in that hot slate that you talked about?
I watched a little bit of Nebraska and Illinois, and that was plenty enough for me.
Well, you know what the best game was? Central and Alcorn State.
Yeah, it was. I watched some of that one.
Yeah. That was the best game of the weekend.
That was a good game.
And congratulations to North Carolina Central. They were heavy underdogs
yep.
in that game against Alcorn. And got the big dub.
Yeah.
They're all punt returners, fast. He ran back a punt for a touchdown. Said he was originally a walk-on at Central. Now he's a scholarship, and he's a super good returner. Mm. So, what up to Central for their nice victory. Did you happen to see the end where they tried to dump the Gatorade on the coach? And it was next-level instincts from the Central coach.
Incredibly elusive and so wise, he backed up.
Yeah.
Every single coach goes forward to try to get away from the cascade of Gatorade. He backed up.
Yeah, he went back and to the side. Yeah, I think he even gave him a little Dikembe Mutombo, oh, you're not going to get me. No.
I would be interested to know if he had actually given that some thought ahead of time, or if that was just something that you can't coach.
Yeah.
And he just did it instinctively.
It was impressive.
It was.
It's instinctive to us having awesome guests here on the Carolina Insider, and we've done it yet again. Good job, Jones and Adam. This time it's Tony Barnhart. Tony wrote for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for a long time. Now he does a bunch of TV work on the SEC network. He is at Mr. CFB on Twitter, writes for Sports Illustrated. He does a whole bunch of stuff. It's pointless to put Tony Barnhart in a box. What he does do is cover college football as well as anybody. Talk to Tony some just about the changing landscape, the actual on-the-field stuff that's about to happen as well, and some other stuff too. So let's get to that. We'll come back and have Adam's list, bunch of stuff to talk about, all coming up on the Carolina Insider.
These are confusing times in college football, and we need those voices who understand what's going on both today and what it means for the future. And when you think of those voices in college football, one of the first ones who comes to mind is Tony Barnhart, who joins us today. Tony,
Mr. College Football.
Yeah, it's right there in his name. Tony, thanks so much for giving us some time today and trying to make some sense of all this.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. It's good to be with you.
What's going on in college football right now?
that's a great place to start. Let's do with that. I spoke to a group the other night, and I've been doing this a long time, and right now there is more change and potential change than at any time in my career. When you think about the name, image, and likeness, you talk about the transfer portal, the possibility of a 12-team playoff, the advent of the alliance and the clear disagreement among some conferences. There's a lot going on, but I told somebody this morning that I was going to do a column that says, even with all that, there's a lot to love about college football, and we're going to celebrate that this week.
Tony, I wanted to ask you about kind of the reaction to this announcement of the alliance, because it seemed like this press conference was just basically to say, hey, we're all kind of talking to each other and we want to try to stay aligned and do the best we can for college athletics. And it seemed like there was a disconnect between what people thought was going to happen with that press conference and what actually happened with that press conference. What were your takeaways of that announcement and what it actually meant?
Well, I was reminded of, you guys are much too young to remember this, but there was a commercial for Wendy's way back when, and a lady gets on the screen and goes, "Where's the beef?" Okay, that's what I thought. What are we talking about here? I just said that's a half hour of my life I'm never going to get back. And it was like the commissioners of those three conferences, the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. Well, we got to do something. The SEC is over here taking over the world, and we got to do something. So here's the takeaway, guys, was this. Nothing, the schedule stuff, you don't need an alliance to do scheduling stuff and all that. But what it comes down to is, how does this impact the potential for a college, to expand the college football playoff? That's where this gets, the rubber meets the road and it gets serious. They meet on September 28th. The commissioners do, of the all 10 of the commissioners in Notre Dame. What comes out of that meeting on September 28th. And to me, that's the most significant part of what the alliance had to say.
Where do you think we're headed? Maybe not in 2021, but in 2025, what's the ultimate endpoint of all this?
Oh, I think the ultimate endpoint of all this is we will expand the playoffs because it's in everybody's financial interest to do so. It's also in the interest of the sport to do so. Here's the magic number, guys, and this is the one that gets a lot of attention when I bring it up. We've had 7 years of the college football playoff. That's four bids a year in the college football. That's 28 total bids. Of the 28 total bids that have been given to the college football playoff, 22 have gone to five schools, the four that played last year plus Oklahoma. And the ratings are starting, the playoffs are starting to get a little tired, and I think we got to do something to juice it up. And that's why after I studied the 12-team playoff model, I thought that was the way to go and still do.
How do you, if it goes to 12 teams in the playoff, how do you account for the longer regular season and asking these college students to play more games and some of those concerns that have been raised?
That is a very legitimate concern, and that's one that's going to have to be addressed. But I always remember this. You only play 17 games if you are you're not ranked in the top four, and then you end up running the table. So mathematically, the 17 games thing is not going to happen very often, but it is a legitimate concern. Maybe you cut back on the regular season. All I know is this. That is a problem that is solvable. It is not a problem that's going to scuttle the idea of a playoff. And so I think that is fixable.
Tony, I know you are deeply embedded in the SEC, and you cover the SEC, and I mean college football in total, extraordinarily closely, but especially the SEC. What has the SEC's reaction been to everybody else's reaction, if that makes sense? It seems like when the Oklahoma and Texas news broke, there were a lot of emotions that seemed to flow from a lot of different entities. What's the reaction to all that been in your neck of the woods?
Well, in my neck of the woods, it's like, well, let's remember now how this actually went down. When people use words like poach and raid and take and all that kind of stuff, that's not what happened. Texas and OU have been unhappy in the Big 12 for a long, long time. And when it came time, when the Big 12 was talking about redoing its, starting its negotiations early so they could get paid, that's when Texas and OU went, no, we're leaving. We don't know where we're going, but we're leaving. The fact of the matter is, Texas and OU knocked on the SEC's door and said, are you interested? And the SEC thought about it and says, well, yes, we are, because the reality is, if the SEC had said no, then Texas and OU walked right down the street and talked to the ACC and the Big Ten, and both of them would have jumped at the chance.
How do you think the schools reconcile this idea that they really need ESPN to be involved in all of this at a very high level, both interest-wise and financial-wise, but they don't want ESPN to have control of everything, but they need them. They don't want to make them mad, but they want their money. They want to be their friend, but you can't tell us what to do. How do they reconcile all that?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, in the interest of full disclosure, I am an employee of ESPN because I work for the SEC network. So let's keep that in mind. The reality is ESPN has done a lot for college football. It is a legitimate concern raised. Hey, do we need to open this thing up? And like, do we need to go to the NFL model and open it up? But this narrative that somehow ESPN is this sinister force lurking over college football who wants to assume intergalactic control of the universe. I mean, come on. I mean, that's a bit much. But I will say it is, if you think more than one network should be involved in the playoff picture, that is a totally legitimate point of view.
If that happens, though, Tony, then you could be like the supreme chancellor of college football.
He wouldn't be the emperor, goodness. But he'd be right below the emperor.
Be interesting. You know, the whole thing, you know, remember when they released the details of the potential 12-game college football playoff? Yeah, there were some issues. There are problems. There always are. But the fact of the matter is, people got excited. I mean, the Group of Five got excited because they knew they were going to get a slot. Notre Dame got excited because they knew more often than not, if they go 11-1, guess what? They're going to get in the playoff and they're going to get a home game. it opened the door for so many people that people got excited. And now to have to come back and say, well, sorry, we can't do it till 2026. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to get done. It may not get done after 2023. I recognize that, but I think it's going to get done.
Tony, let me change gears here and ask about name, image, and likeness. I don't think anybody thinks it's a bad idea. I mean, it seems crazy that student athletes haven't been able to do some of these type of things before, and yet there are also some inherent challenges with it, and there just aren't a whole lot of regulations on it at this moment. How do you think we do this, but do this in a smart way that doesn't somehow create an enormous amount of inequity?
Well, the first 2 to 3 years are going to be the wild, wild west. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Until we figure out what the governance structure of college athletics is going to be, NCAA has obviously raised the white flag. So what is that going to be? And then you can put in a system of checks and balances. Right now, it's up to the individual schools or the individual states that have laws involved. But this much is clear, guys. Name, image, and likeness was going to happen. The Supreme Court told us that when they slam dunk the NCAA 9-0. The court's position in all this, yes, this is a problem for you, but it is your problem, university. You need to figure it out. And there's no reason these guys and ladies should not have access to the open market.
So, Tony, how do we govern this thing? What's the right answer? Is it a commissioner? Is it a group from all the Power Five conferences? What is the right way, in your opinion, to lead this thing?
Well, my opinion is that you go with a much smaller subgroup, like maybe the FBS, the 127 FBS schools, something like that. Either that or come up with a plan where each sport has its own governing body and you've got a commissioner for each sport, something like that. One of those two ways to do it. But the NCAA is too unwieldy, too cumbersome, and moves with glacier-like pace. So something's got to change there.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you is, have we outgrown the NCAA?
Yes, long time ago. And the NCAA, listen, to be fair, the NCAA is made up of member institutions. And it is when you have this, but when you have something that big and an enforcement agency that's not known for its speed, then you got to make some changes. So I'm anxious to see what the next form looks like. But the NCAA does some things well. They run a nice basketball tournament. They run a nice baseball tournament and other championships. Let's keep that. But the governance structure, the enforcement structure, that needs to be completely changed.
At some point, we are actually going to get to play football in 2021, and we're a little excited about it here in Chapel Hill. I know you've got the Tar Heels number 9 in your preseason rankings. Tony's got Georgia number 1. What do you think about the Tar Heels in 2021?
Well, I've had a good number of conversations with Coach Brown. He's excited about this team. Obviously, they're going to be very good on offense with Sam Howell coming back. The thing that concerns me, concerns a lot of people, giving up too many big plays on defense. That was a problem a year ago. That's got to get fixed. But I like Carolina to win the Coastal Division with a good push by Miami.
Tony, what is Mac Brown from the outside? I mean, we see Coach Brown and what he's doing every single day. What is the opinion from the outside on what he's been able to do in Chapel Hill this second time around and do so quickly?
Well, Mac has always been one of the more personable people you're going to meet. Great recruiter because of it. And I think when Mac came back to Carolina, he said, can he bring that recruiting magic back with him to Chapel Hill? And he goes out and gets Sam Howell. So I think Mac Brown is – he is one of the great ambassadors of this sport, and looks out for the general well-being of the sport and what goes on at Carolina. So I think he's one of the more highly respected coaches we have in all of college football.
What's the outside perception of Carolina football as a whole? Like, we don't really know because we're in it too far, but when people think of Carolina football, they think of Carolina like we think of what?
Well, I think people look at Carolina, and it's been done before. I mean, obviously Bill Dooley had a nice run there. Dick Crum had some very good teams there. And it's a place where you should be successful. And bringing in Mac Brown the first time around showed that all the elements were there. He was ahead of the game when it came to facilities improvement. So I think Carolina is one of those teams that people realize can be good year in and year out, good recruiting base for sure, particularly in Eastern North Carolina. So I think people have a great deal of respect. Now, can they step up and play with the Clemsons of the world? I think the answer is yes, but that's the next step, to meet Clemson in an ACC championship game and beat them. That's the next step for Mac Brown in Carolina.
Tony, we know Oklahoma, and we know Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama and Clemson, and it seems like those five right now are on a different level, and everybody else trying to get to that level. Other than the Tar Heels, who we just discussed, and we feel like, at least here in Chapel Hill, are getting closer, who are some other teams in your mind outside of that five that are scratching, that are knocking on the door, that are trying to get to that level and are at least relatively close to doing so?
Well, for this year, for sure, keep your eye on Iowa State. Iowa State is a team. Quarterback Brock Purdy, Matt Campbell's done an incredible job. He definitely could have left last year, but he decided to come back because he's basically been preparing this team for his entire career. So I would definitely keep your eye on that team. You know, the issue is, the problem is that there are not a whole lot of teams that can really break in. We don't know about Florida. We don't know about a number of teams out there, but it's going to be interesting. It really is. Teams like Wisconsin, a team you'd like, people look here, here are two teams to look at. Oregon comes back. Mario Cristobal has brought a sort of a SEC Big Ten mentality to that program. Keep your eye there. Cincinnati, the team that took Georgia to the limit in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, has everybody coming back, including Desmond Ridder, their quarterback. Notre Dame, I think, is good if they can get consistent quarterback play. And also, the other team I've been telling people look out for is Texas A&M. Texas A&M has been building. Jimbo Fisher's been building towards this season since he got there. They play Alabama in College Station on October 9th. If you're going to get Alabama, this is going to be the year, because they're reloading for sure. But I would definitely keep an eye on the Aggies.
Why is it, you mentioned breaking into that group of those five teams that always seem to be there? Why is it so difficult to break into that group? What's the gap between them and the rest?
Oh, it's a great question. It's got a really simple answer: the college football playoff. Okay, remember I mentioned to you a few minutes ago that 22 of the 28 bids had gone to five conferences. A total of only 11 teams total have played in the college football playoff. Why is that? Because when it comes time to go recruiting, Dabo Swinney can tell a recruit that's looking at Clemson and looking at South Carolina, hey, we've been in the playoff 4, 5, 6 years in a row. If you want to do that, then you need to come with us. It was the law of unintended consequences. Nobody thought about the fact that the teams who go to the playoffs have a distinct advantage when it comes time to recruit. That's another reason the idea has gone to 12 teams. If you go to 12 teams have the ability to get in the playoff, then more and more people can use that as a recruiting tool, and the talent will spread out. But that's the reason the power is concentrated in all those teams. They get it's kind of like the incumbency in politics. If you're already in the office, you got a distinct advantage in the next election. Same thing with football.
Tony, this is totally changing gears. How did you become Mr. College Football? How did that happen? I mean, when did you become this person who we all love and respect and want to know your opinion? Like, take us through that journey to this point.
I can take absolutely no credit for that whatsoever. in my final, I don't know, obviously I was with the AJC for 25 years, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, for 25 years. My last 4 or 5 years there, we ramped up our internet product, sports website, and the editor of that website came to me and says, "Hey, Tony, we want you to do a blog." I said, "Hey, that's great. What's a blog?" And they explained it to me, and I said, "Oh, I get it. You want me to write something on the internet that will get people arguing amongst themselves." He said, "That's it. That's exactly it." He said, "We've got a name for it. We're going to call it Mr. College Football." I said, "Mr. College Football, that's kind of cheesy, isn't it?" He said, "Yeah, but cheesy works on the internet." So they became Mr. College Football. And when I left the AJC in 08, because the economy tanked and they offered me money to leave, I left and took the title with me and have kept it ever since.
How's your job changed as putting things on the internet for people to argue amongst themselves has become so important? I imagine what you do today is different than what you did 20 years ago, but you're still doing it at the top level.
Well, thank you. Listen, I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, from 77 to 84 when I went to Atlanta. And when I came to Greensboro, we were still filing stories. We would take a portable typewriter and a machine called a telecopier that you guys are way too young to remember this, that you would plug in and send your stories back to the newspaper one page at a time. And again, this was 1977, 78. And so it took 6 minutes to send one page. It was unbelievable. Then as time grew on, the technology and the internet changed everything. And so obviously social media changed everything. And now we used to have debates in our news meetings that we had this breaking story and we would debate on whether or not to actually put it on the internet or wait until tomorrow morning and put it in the newspaper. We would obviously you would never have that debate now, but early in my career, we did have those debates. The social media and the immediate information stream absolutely changed the way we do things.
So you and our good friend Wes Durham had a show together for too brief a period of time, let me just say. How do we get you two back together?
I get notes every week about Barnhart and Durham. We had so much fun on that show. And Wes and I went through a stretch where he and I were both burning. I was going to New York twice a week to work for CBS. Wes and I did radio 4 days, 3-hour show, 4 days a week. I was all over the place. We had a blast. Finally, it got to the point where our wives told us we had to let some stuff go, or they were just going to beat us upside the head. But Wes, the Barnhart Durham is something we never let go. We had so much fun with that. And I still hear from people every day from wanting to bring Barnhart and Durham back. But now it's Packer and Durham. Now they're doing a great job for the ACC network.
What if we had some kind of like angry crossover show between the SEC network and the ACC network, and you and Wes just like yelled at each other for an hour? What about that?
That would be fun. We'll get Durham with Packer, and I'll get my man Peter Burns, and we'll just go 15 rounds. I mean that's what we're doing.
But you'd have to take on the persona of your conference, and so Wes would have to like yap at you, and then you just pat him on the head and be like, "All right, buddy, we're gonna go take a bath in our bathtub of money. See you later."
so we're gonna be just fine. We're gonna be just fine.
All right, Tony, give us your college football playoff prediction. Give us your champion for this year. I know you got Georgia number one right now. Who do you think ultimately ends up there?
I got Georgia playing Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. Remember that the playoffs, the semifinals are on December 31st this year. And I've got Georgia playing Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. And I've got Clemson playing Alabama. I think Alabama and Georgia, if they're both undefeated, both get in. And I knew it would make a lot of people mad, so I went ahead and did it anyway. And I've got Clemson and Alabama playing in the Orange Bowl in the other semifinal. I've got Clemson winning that game. So I've got Georgia and Clemson in the national championship game with Georgia winning.
See, Tony's still trying to get people mad on the internet. That's what he's trying to do.
That's, That's what we do. That's what we do. Right. Absolutely.
Tony, before I want to ask you one more thing. And what is it with fans in the SEC and SEC in general? They take this whole conference pride, and like if Alabama wins, they take it as a win for all. And I'm not saying there's not other good teams, because obviously Georgia's great, Texas A&M's great, all those things. But that doesn't happen in other conferences. I feel like in the ACC, you don't want the conference, the other team in your conference, to win. What is it about the SEC that has that communal cheering, even if it isn't for your own team?
Well, you know, I guess it just means more. It has really been that way really since 1992 when the SEC expanded and did a lot, adding South Carolina and Arkansas. And there is just a certain, you know, Paul Feinbaum wrote the book, "My conference is better than your, my conference can beat your conference." You know, it is a unique thing, because I'm telling you, well, okay, here's a great example. Georgia played at Notre Dame in 2017. Georgia took about 40,000 fans to South Bend, one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. The day before the game, Vince Dooley, the former Georgia coach, threw out the first pitch at the Cubs game. And all the Georgia fans that were in Wrigley Field started chanting, "SEC, SEC," and that's the way this conference is. You know, when you play one, you want to beat them as bad as you can, but you want them to turn around and beat the other team. There's a lot of conference pride. It is unique. I will give you that, but it is real.
Awesome stuff from Tony. I'm gonna get Adam back in here from doing his ACC chant out in the middle of the building in just a second. And while we work on getting him out here, I mean, as soon as BC, you know, scores a goal in field hockey, Adam is so excited.
Field hockey's still a little raw right now, but when BC scores in ice hockey, my heart swells three sizes, because that is an ACC member not really competing in an ACC sport, but still, they're doing it for us.
I mean, I am not trying to downplay or act like it's dumb or something. It's just very different than anyone else. Like, I don't think Ohio State cheers for Michigan State. I know we know they don't cheer for Michigan. Right. Like, is Ohio State really happy if Penn State does something right?
I think it's very much a cultural thing.
It is.
That's your region.
Right.
And sometimes...
But there are plenty of schools in the ACC that are in the region. Like, I mean, Miami, Florida State, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Carolina State. I mean, you don't get excited when Clemson does something right. Or Florida State. You just go, Like, you'll respect it, but I don't go running down the street chanting ACC.
You don't have an extra chocolate nut sundae if the ACC wins the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
It is a unique deal, and that's fine. It's not right. It's not wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
Can't we just all come together, Adam? One thing we can all come together on is that you should not text while driving. I got to tell you, I've seen a lot of people texting while driving recently.
Oh, if you ever look around, a lot of people do it.
Just don't do it. It takes your eyes off the road for approximately 5 seconds. And I think that number's a little low, to be honest with you. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down the phone while you're driving. Look, like, honestly, can the text not wait 7 minutes for you to say okay or send a thumbs up? TrustedChoice.com/GoHeels. Learn more. Find an agent near you. I know we've talked about this before. I do not like the thing on text where you don't text back. You just like mark the text with like a heart or a thumbs up or a thumbs down. I know a lot of people do it.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's not okay for you. It's just not okay for me. I don't like it.
I don't do it.
I think it's dismissive.
It's very disrespectful to the intensive time you put in to send me a text.
You know, what I can see a purpose for it is ending a conversation. So, like, if I send a text and you just give, like, the thumbs up on the text, not the thumbs up emoji.
Right.
But the thumbs up marker.
Right.
Like, where else do I have to go at that point?
Hey, thanks for acknowledging
me. Yeah, this road has ended. Boys to men, it's the end of the road. But if I give the thumb, because there are some people whose goal in the text is to be the last one to text.
Right.
Like, you can't be, you can't end it. They have to end it.
Right.
But if you put that thing on there, it's like, well,
he's checkmated me.
So, anyway, Adam, if I, the next time I do that, it'll be the first time I do that.
Have we talked about voice text on here?
I'm sure we have. Yes, it doesn't work.
I'm not talking about voice to text. I'm talking about the voice text.
It's essentially a voicemail message, which I don't want that either.
I know several people who utilize these, one of whom is my wife, and I have told her that when she sends me those, I will not be listening to them because I do not want to encourage that habit. But she's got another friend. They do that to each other all the time. That, just take the time to type with your fingers. If you want to call them on the telephone. That's when you can talk to them.
Adam, I know this is probably a part of your list, but I kind of wonder if we should just, should we just make this a recurring thing where we just go ahead and look back at the previous weekend as what happened around. I mean, I know we essentially do it anyway.
Right.
But what if we just planned on doing it, like right here, every show?
Have you got a sponsor in mind?
My heart.
Potato chips around the world.
So what happened you know what? This week, since we don't have a champion of the gridiron to do because Tar Heels haven't played yet, this is going to be our champion. All the champions that competed this weekend for the Tar Heels, brought to you by UNC Health. They're dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports.
Volleyball looking like some champions. They went down to Texas, and they were looking for a soul to steal. That was actually Georgia.
Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been." He played Found a Mountain, Run, Boys, Run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun.
And they won all three matches, including defeating host SMU. So that's a really good start for Joe Segula's club. Women's soccer also started out hot. They won two on the road in the Big Ten.
Started out hot.
Our alliance partners but foes on the field, one at Illinois and at Ohio State. Men's soccer fought to a draw with VCU, but outshot the Rams 50-4, 5-0-4.
Adam, okay, hand up. I didn't watch the men's soccer match on Sunday.
Right, nor did I.
How do you shoot it 50 times? Can that number be real?
I've never heard of 50 shots in a soccer match.
I'm not saying this in some way to be like, what are you doing? Like, I've never heard of 50 shots. 50? That's a lot. That's a lot.
Well, and for only one to go in, how impenetrable are you, Virginia Commonwealth defense? I mean, did they just have all 11 guys standing in the mouth of the net?
I don't know. That's a wild number.
That should be against the rules.
I mean, that comes off. Carolina had beaten Bucknell 7-0. They're getting a bunch of shots up there.
But that was on like 20 shots. They were very successful shooting against Bucknell, and the water ran dry against VCU.
Still a tie. VCU had already picked up a big win earlier in the week against Wake Forest, the highest ranked opponent that VCU has ever defeated in men's soccer. No big deal. So
Soccer Corner is brought to you by Jones.
Tar Heels are going to be good this year. I think men's soccer's got a chance to be really good this year.
Heck yeah, if they shoot it 50 times a game, they are going to be pretty good.
That's a wild number.
Disappointing start for field hockey, but look, Michigan and Iowa, who beat the Tar Heels up in Iowa City, you take your August wins.
We'll
see you in November.
Both those teams ranked in the top three.
Yeah, one was number two, one was number three. Right. Carolina number one.
First games of the season, and I have full confidence in Karen Shelton and Aaron Mattson and Cassie Sumfest and the rest of them to get it done.
And you also have to remember, that's the biggest match they're going to play.
Oh, you know Michigan. I mean, Michigan was ready for that one.
As well,
of course, that was a replay of the national championship game from a year ago.
I think Carolina was something like 31-3 against Iowa. So, I mean, they've been looking forward to it all summer. So, congratulations on those wins. Those are great victories. But we'll see down the road.
Women's soccer. Did you already say this?
I did.
Okay, sorry.
Our Big Ten Alliance partners.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the reason I wasn't 100% sure is because I was finding an awesome email that I'm going to read a little bit later in the show.
Oh, good.
So there was a reason that I tuned you out this time.
So overall, solid. Not really the first weekend, but close to the first weekend of competition, and a lot of home stuff coming up this coming weekend, which we'll talk about in the Friday show.
Yeah. So just one before the Friday show comes out, women's soccer going to have Northwestern. That's in Chapel Hill. That's Thursday.
You spent a whole year not able to go to Carolina sporting events. Now this weekend's going to be a good chance to get back into it.
So that's just one that you won't get a chance for us to tell you about coming up. So that is Thursday, 7 o'clock, women's soccer hosting Northwestern coming up. Okay, Adam, how about a list?
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Well, we talked about ACC and SEC. What about this David Teal report that the ACC is exploring leaving Greensboro? How do you feel about this?
I have mixed emotions about it. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you don't need me to tell you the history of Greensboro and the ACC and what it means to the Atlantic Coast Conference. And yet, having said that, things are different in 2021 than they were in 1981 or 1971. The league is very different. It is much wider and larger than it was then, more diverse than it was then. So, and I know that sounds like I'm taking a shot at Greensboro, like it's not big city enough, and I don't mean it that way, but I can see the value of moving to Charlotte or something like that. Now, I think it's my own personal opinion, I think it'd be crazy to go to New York. I mean, I think one thing hopefully everyone learned from the Pac-12 is that you don't have to have the fanciest offices in the land to be successful. And in fact, you know, the money that they were paying for their new San Francisco area home base was a little bit of a weight on the conference in total. And I think if there's something that we've learned as society over the last year and a half, is that, like, how important is the home base really at this point? Because you can do so much sitting in your room. So I do see the value. Like, I can see the value of wanting a busier airport or an airport, for example, that has more options like a Charlotte would compared to a Greensboro, just for example. But I don't think moving to New York or to D.C., or Atlanta somehow gives you more credence as a conference or somehow makes you better. So I can see it both ways. If they go anywhere other than Charlotte, I think I'll think it's a bad move. If they go to Charlotte, I'll say, okay, I can see that.
I agree with that. What really happens where the league office is?
Right. And there might be a lot that you and I mean, there's obviously offices there and people who work for the ACC, of course, are there. We know Kevin Best, for example, who worked at Carolina forever and is a good friend of both of ours, now works for the ACC. And so, I mean, there is like a home base aspect to it for people who work for the conference. But I think we are in a different place now than it's not like they're having all the football coaches over to the Grandover anymore.
Yeah. Are we talking about moving to Charlotte or are we talking about moving to Hoboken? If we're talking about moving to Charlotte, that makes sense to me. You're close to a lot of ESPN production stuff, which matters a lot. And you're really a little bit over an hour from Greensboro. If you're talking about moving to Hoboken, we need to think that through a little bit more. But stay where the conference matters. I think that's why Atlanta is not as good a choice, because you're moving right into the teeth of people running down the street screaming SEC. And you're not going to, like, that's their lives. You're not going to change that. But if you're just going to Charlotte, I think it's okay, and it might even make sense.
I know we've talked about a similar topic before. Now, Charlotte has become the pretty consistent home of the football championship. And it's, you know, like the SEC is in Atlanta. Like, if you told me that Charlotte was going to consistently kind of be the synonymous place with the ACC at this point, where most of the basketball tournaments would be, where the football championship was going to be, again, I would hope, especially for the basketball tournament, that you would keep Greensboro in that discussion. But if you told me that Charlotte was going to become that new synonymous place with the ACC, I wouldn't think that was a bad idea.
I can see a day when Greensboro goes into that pot with Washington, D.C., Brooklyn, maybe Atlanta, as every once in a while ACC tournament locations. And I can also see a day where maybe it's not in that rotation anymore because times have changed. I don't think that won't make me happy.
Right. No, won't make me happy at all, because the people of Greensboro do genuinely take pride in and love the ACC basketball tournament. And there's people who have worked that event forever and ever and ever, and there's fans who go to that event every single time it's there. It wouldn't make me happy, but it might happen because people don't make decisions on what makes me happy.
It's like the changing face of minor league baseball. I mean, we watched Bull Durham. It's not like that anymore. It was awesome when it was, but that's just not how business is done, and it is most definitely a business now. And that's a business move. Cagey move by Jim Phillips to hire a consultant so that when they inevitably decide they're moving, he can say, that's what the consultant told me. I didn't do it. So that people don't say, oh, this carpetbagger coming in here moving the league.
I mean, I do feel like Big Ten's kind of Chicago, SEC's Atlanta, Pac-12's kind of getting a little Vegas feel to it, where it's starting to have a lot of its events and tournaments and things like that. I don't think that'd be a bad move for the ACC, while I would hope they would also have some traditional roots still involved.
Yes. Good scoop by David Teal that got everybody talking about
it. What a mature discussion we just had about that.
We mentioned this earlier, but change your calendars for 2022. Florida A&M, the season opener, is moving to August 27th. Old Mac Brown heard you talking on the pod about how your preferred scheduling plan is start a little softer before you jump in, and that's what the Tar Heels are going to do next season.
Well, like we talked about briefly there at the beginning, I think it's a good move, and especially when you're going to be more than likely breaking in a new quarterback next season or as a first-time consistent starter. I think that's the right move to get a home game against an opponent that you are likely to defeat, even though, of course, we understand that's not guaranteed. I think it's the right play.
Congratulations to former pod guest Marty Brenneman.
I'm Marty Brenneman. See you later, Big Ritz.
Went into the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame over the weekend. They had a really cool event for him, and a lot of people came.
He's beloved. I mean, he is absolutely beloved there.
An incredible assortment of Reds from his broadcasting career, and then they played a charity softball game and sold tickets and 5 or 10,000 fans came to the park where the Reds play. Really big deal, and Marty gave a great speech to all those folks who came and said it was the greatest honor of his career, other than being on the Carolina Insider. Well,
when was he on, Adam? Last spring? Is that right?
I feel like that's right.
Yeah, so like spring of 2020 time period, that's the general time frame where when Marty Brennan was on. While Adam hustles to look it up, why don't I tell you about a couple different things real fast? Number one, don't forget, we're into the season. Mac Brown radio show was last night. We are, unfortunately, as we said a couple weeks ago, at least for now, not going to be live at Top of the Hill. That was the plan. But with COVID being how it is at the moment, we elected to bring that into the studio. So Coach has a setup over in Keenan. I'm here in our Pod World headquarters / Tar Heel Sports Network studio, and we are going to do the shows that way at least through the first month. That will be something that we continue to monitor. We're in discussions with the medical team at Carolina about the best practices moving forward. So that is, at least for the first month, how we're going to do it. And a reminder that you will be receiving the Mac Brown Show in your podcast feed. If you subscribe to the Carolina Insider, the Mac Brown Show will be sent out on Tuesdays. So on Tuesdays during football season and, well, basketball season more than likely too, although those details haven't been 100% finalized, you'll be getting a regular, quote-unquote, edition of the podcast plus the Mac Brown Show. So keep that in mind as you move through the year.
May 1st, 2020. For Marty Brown.
Yeah, I was right. Spring 2020.
Basically right on it. John Howes asked us a very apropos question. Do we classify Chex Mix as a chip?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
It's a Chex Mix is a party mix.
Completely different category than
it's
chip.
Like, it's like what's on Adam's iPod 1, a party mix.
So, John, the answer to that is no.
John, you just get out of here with that.
I will throw in another chip. I feel sure this was brought up in the hundreds of responses we got, but I just tried them for the first time this weekend. Sun Chips in the green bag French onion.
Hmm.
They are good.
Have you had the prison chips yet?
No, my shipment's been delayed.
Well, I knew the prison chips were popular when I had to pay like $10 for a bag of prison chips. And so apparently the prison chips, the whole shebang, is like every flavor in one thrown in there. That's why it's called the whole shebang.
Some people might think it was questionable marketing to be known as the prison chips, but I feel like this has really helped them.
It's worked out well for them.
Oh, those are the chips from jail. Yeah that's right. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Those are highly sought after.
Did you see this story about the high school football game that was on ESPN this weekend?
Yes, I did.
It was IMG Academy, which we know is a legitimate school, as those type of schools go. And they were playing Bishop Sycamore, a quote-unquote team from Ohio.
Yeah, this is a wild story.
This was on Football Scoop. And as it turns out, it seems like there's not really a school that is Bishop Sycamore. And they had just played a game on Friday, Bishop Sycamore had. And then they played again on Sunday in a big game, the Hall of Fame Classic at Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio. And I think it seems like the ESPN announcers kind of figured it out as the game was taking place and spoke pretty freely about the fact that this game should not be occurring.
Right. I'm not sure this is all ESPN's fault, because I don't think it is, because as you mentioned, someone had to put on this game. I mean, like, how would something like this happen? And I fully admit I don't know how these games get scheduled. So, I mean, I don't know how some kind of big national type of high school game gets scheduled. I don't know that process.
It was arranged by Paragon Marketing Group.
Well, I would think that Paragon Marketing Group didn't do a very good job.
They're going to need to return some fees.
I mean, wouldn't you need to vet that out a little bit more? There's so many layers to it. The fact that this school claimed to have a bunch of D1 prospects, which they didn't have, that they claimed to be a legitimate school, which apparently they aren't. They barely had enough players, I think, to fill out just a normal roster where, I mean, you're legitimately at that point. And I know sometimes you can just cry health and safety and everybody just has to go, oh, he's right, health and safety. That's a legitimate health and safety concern. Like, all of those things, never mind the fact that they played 2 days earlier. You would think you could at least look at the schedule. Because going back to health and safety, I mean, you can't ask anybody, much less high school age people, although there's some discussion that maybe these guys were actually kind of post-grad high school. It's a very strange scenario, but the point is this. Game should have never happened. Of course, Bishop Sycamore is the ultimate entity doing the wrong thing here by not telling the truth and not being very legitimate, but there also seems like there were a lot of steps along the way that this could have been stopped.
Are there any adults at Bishop Sycamore? Right. And if so, which one of them thought, well, this seems fine, we'll play on Friday, and then we'll play super-duper powerhouse IMG Academy on Sunday?
Well, and that's the other thing. IMG Academy is probably the best team high school-wise in the nation, or certainly one of the two or three. So, yeah, it was just a lot was wrong with this.
And they flew, I assume, from Florida to Ohio to play the game.
Like, legitimately a lot wrong. Not just, what a wacky, kooky story. Like, this was this was really not right.
Ed Yount sent us an email with another raise a racket suggestion. It's going to be time to start narrowing those down pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm going to have to soon.
And he thought that since you are an accomplished golfer, you could have match play against Austin Greaser and see if Jones can win X number of holes. What do you think the X should be?
Well, I would love to do that. I would have to get strokes, though. Like, do I get a stroke per hole? Like, I might could win a hole if I got a stroke per hole.
If you were allowed to talk trash and distract Austin while he was playing and grab his club on the backswing.
So I mean, that would basically mean if I got a 5 on a hole, it would really be a 4.
Right.
And if Austin got a 4, it would be a 4. So he would obviously destroy me. That's not what I'm saying here. But could there be a hole where he hits one wacky and gets in a little bit of trouble and gets a bogey, and somehow I get a bogey also, but it counts as a par because I'm getting a stroke? I could see that. That could happen. It's not going to happen for Raise a Racket, but it could happen. It's a good suggestion.
Austin Greaser, the gauntlet has been thrown down, sir.
But the problem is my list of things that I like, go have the tennis teams fire tennis balls at you. Go take on the U.S. amateur runner-up, even though you're like a 18 handicap. Okay, yes, okay, yeah, just add it to the list. I'm trying to edit this podcast. I'll be there as soon as I can be.
Speaking of things you have to do, wanted to close with our favorite, Aaron Mattson.
Oh, my gosh, Adam. My heart is happy.
She made us wait for the pictures of her with the potty, but it was well worth it because she clearly brought the potty to photo day for the field hockey team. We retweeted it from the pod account yesterday.
Yeah, so it's on her account, which is at Aaron Mattson, ErinMattsonn. She's got an extra N on her Twitter handle, even though her last name just has one. And we retweeted it as well. You really should see it. It's awesome. Thanks to all the other members of the team who took one of the pictures. We're kind of goofy with her as well. And then, what a terrific way to close potty season, Adam, as we had already received our pictures from Joe Forte and B-Dot and Susan Yeld, and now Aaron Mattson as well.
Yes, we know. Jones still has to stop shots from Aaron. We're now in season. We talked about this on a previous episode. It's going to happen, probably not today.
I saw Karen Shelton the other day, and she asked me about it.
Oh, really?
And then I said, well, we're trying to. She's like, you may not want to do that. Like, she was she was like trying to – it was like somebody from ESPN talking to Bishop Sycamore. Like, I'm just telling you, that's not a good idea.
I'm trying to be the adult here, Jones.
Yeah.
And tell you that that's not a wise choice.
Don't do that. A couple quick things. Reminder – of our affiliate change in Raleigh. If you're looking for the radio, broadcast on Friday night or throughout the season that we are now on WPTF instead of WTKK, which was 106.1. PTF's largest signal is their AM signal, which is 680. There are some FMs as well associated with that, but those are smaller. The FMs that they have are, I think they're called transistor FMs or something, where they cover about a county or so. But the AM is the powerhouse there. So just a reminder about that, and we'll keep reminding you throughout the season, because I know that is something that is difficult to remember when you're used to doing one thing and then all of a sudden that changes. A recommendation if you are wanting to stream, Adam.
I am.
New app. So, don't want to get too deep into the woods here, but one easy way in the past to stream our and other college broadcasts was TuneIn. TuneIn is still around, but it will now require a subscription to listen to the college broadcasts. So in the past, it was free. Now you have to pay. Still an option. Your call if you want to do it, but you do have to pay. There is a new app called the Varsity Network app. You may have seen over the last couple of weeks, our logo has the Varsity Network on there underneath the Carolina Insider. Varsity Network is something created by Learfield, who you know, to provide the similar service that TuneIn provided previously, but for free. So you can get a little Tar Heel Sports Network hub. You can just, when you download the app, the Varsity Network app, you can choose your favorite team. Then you can choose, I think on for North Carolina, it's football, basketball, baseball, women's basketball, women's soccer, and then like general or something like that. So anytime there are broadcasts of that team and that sport, that will be right there easily available in your feed. You don't have to sign up as a team for your favorite team, but it makes it easier. But you could always just go on there and search up North Carolina or whatever. So easy way. It's still very, very new. Like, I think it came out a couple of days ago. There hasn't been this big launch or anything, but you will hear more about that as we move through this season. And I would encourage you to download it if that is a way that you have listened to games in the past, if you like to stream. Of course, we're also available on the Go Heels app, which is nice home for all your Tar Heels sports news. So there are a lot of different options there for streaming. That's another one that is provided by Learfield. And so just wanted to make everyone aware, and we'll remind you about that again as we move through the year.
I downloaded the Varsity Network app today.
So, yeah, I did too. And, again, I think there's probably going to be, just because it's so new, I'm sure there'll be some bugs and hiccups and things like that. But I think when it gets there, it's going to be a useful tool if that is a way that you like to listen to the games.
It's so nice when you're, say, out of the area but in the car, and you're not sure how to find stuff, to have one place where you know where you can go to get the broadcast is huge, so that you don't end up searching around trying to find it futilely.
Of course, we'll be on XM, and we've got 40 terrific in-state affiliates too, so it's hard to get away from us. We're right behind you. Okay, before we let you go, Adam, I want to end with this email. You were not good enough to receive this email. Mm. It just came to me.
Okay.
It is from Jacob Bonnenberger, and Jacob sent me this email. He says, Jones, parentheses, not Adam. No, he didn't say that. That was me adding that part. Longtime pod lover, first-time writer. I heard your mention of trailers on the last show. And remember, we talked about the slow music being popular for movie trailers. I wanted to thank you for the introduction to Cruel Summer by Cobra Kai, or from Cobra Kai. Side note, that was Adam who did that, but I will happily take any of the praise.
Does Jacob know that I'm on this show?
And if you can't find the game on Friday, email Adam. He's the one who's your home for all that information. Jacob's teenage son, Francisco, and I, speaking as Jacob, have struggled to find common ground as our musical tastes have diverged. However, it turns out we both really liked this new trailerized version of Cruel Summer. As a result, I dove into this rabbit hole and discovered a host of other songs in the same style and even created a Spotify playlist, which he gave me the link to, Adam, and not you.
Do you even use Spotify?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm hip.
I do too.
You can find the podcast on Spotify. Don't
forget. That's where I listen to it. I wish I had access to that playlist. I'd probably like that.
For $25, Adam.
I could get a cameo for that. You can tell me what the playlist
is. I will
is.
Give you a happy birthday message and this Spotify playlist. This has made our drives much more peaceful for when we are between pod episodes, of course. Thanks again for the introduction and all you guys do for the Tar Heels. Jake, who's got 2 degrees from Carolina, 96 and 06, and he says, P.S., don't miss Crawling, Hazy Shade of Winter, or Whitesnake's classic, No One Like You. He said those are good ones for a slowed down version. So, Jacob, thank you. Thanks for the kind words. Thanks for listening. And what up?
Jacob, my name's Adam, and sometimes I'm on here.
His name is Steve.
And I really liked slowed down movie trailer songs.
His name is Steve.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. Ooh, I got to tell you something. Good guest coming up on Friday. Think you're going to enjoy it. If you hear the Mac Brown Show, you're going to get a little sneak peek of that interview. But if you love the sneak peek, you're going to love the full thing. It's just a great interview. Adam, I'm going to say, I think it's got some potty possibilities.
So it's coming out in September. That's one of the earlier potty.
Well, I got to tell you, I think Billy Crudup's got some potty possibilities. We got a couple Jim Hevner potty opportunities. I mean, I think there's been some potty possibilities here early in the year.
The potties are traditionally slanted towards later appearing interviews.
I understand.
It's our job to make sure everyone gets a fair shake.
Yep. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I think this one has at least a chance to get some potty discussion.
You're all going to lose to Erin Mattson, whether she's on the show or not.
So that's coming up. Plus, we'll have the preview of Virginia Tech, 5-second challenge, and a lot more. All that coming up on Friday. But for now, we're going to let Mr. College Football Tony Barnhart and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hi, this is Tony Barnhart. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.